Rabbi Nachama Leibowitz.
Okay, our shiur for today is Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Lechav. Every week we are doing another iyun of Nachama Leibowitz, and our iyun today is Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Lechav. Moshe grows up and he goes out to his brethren, and what does he see? And the real question for today that Nachama wants to ask is, was it justified or was it unjustified? Because what does Moshe do when he goes out? Do you have the English or just the Hebrew? Do they have the full? I'm using my own. 27 is the English, but did they just do one page by accident? Did just one page come out, or do you have a whole? Is it 27? Okay, in the Hebrew or the English? Okay, so we're doing on page 28. Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Lechav. Nechama's big question is Moshe's act justified or unjustified? And that is our question. We're going to see how Nechama develops this idea. We all know the way we understand Moshe, he goes out, and when he sees an Egyptian oppressing a Hebrew from his brethren, that he is a hero. He stands up for Am Yisrael. And from the beginning, we see that Moshe is standing up for his brothers. Nechama wants to bring the question, was this first act justified or unjustified? And let's see how Nechama presents it for us. Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Lechav. In true fashion, Nechama always brings part of the pasuk as her heading, and she brings a little introduction and then starts with the psukim themselves. Look what Nechama introduces. Ein haTorah mesaperet keitzad higia Moshe hamigudal etzel bat paro ze asher kol sharei haolam ze ptuchim lefanav. Nechama brings this whole introduction and asks the question, how come we don't know much about Moshe's youth? We only know that he grew up in the house of Paro, and then he goes out and he seeks his brethren. What happens in that whole time period? What kind of emotional trauma or emotional experiences does Moshe have? What is going on in the house of Paro? What really moves Moshe to see his brethren and do something about it? So Nechama asks the question, how come the Torah doesn't tell us all these details about his early life? And what's fascinating is that Nechama says that the Torah is not a psychological novel. The Torah is not interested in telling us all these details because sometimes these details are not very important. We do have some Sfarim and Tanakh which tell us a lot, but we don't know about Abraham's youth. We have a lot of Midrashim that tell us, but the Torah itself doesn't tell us a lot of these details. So Nechama says, what's going on here? The Torah is not giving us details about his early life, but already it shows what's his first important act. That's what the Torah is interested in. Moshe's first important act, that will tell us a lot about who Moshe is. So his whole childhood is not as important as telling us when he steps out, what does he do? And Nechama says these words, and this pasuk is very important. What does it tell us? In one pasuk, boom, it tells us a lot about Moshe. Vayigdal Moshe, vayetze elechav, vayar besivlotam. What does Moshe do? When he grows up, he goes out to his brethren and he sees their anguish. Right away we understand what kind of person is Moshe? Person who understands the anguish of his brethren. That is an important element, an essence of who Moshe is. And she quotes Rashi to show us. Rashi understood this as well. What is Rashi explaining to us? He's not just seeing, right? When Moshe goes out, he's not just seeing, because, of course, everyone sees that the Jews are being oppressed. But Rashi explains Natan einav velibo lihiyot meitzar alehem. What's special about Moshe? Rashi explains that he gives his heart and his eyes to be caring about them, to be upset about what is going on, which means that Moshe is someone who is very compassionate. Rashi is setting right away that Moshe is someone compassionate. He sees, but he also then feels in his heart, and he has their anguish. So right away, Rashi wants us to understand that Moshe is a compassionate individual. Now, she claims, right? She sets that claim, and then she goes to another question. She says, so what really motivated Moshe to feel that way? And he's growing up in the house of Paro. So what would motivate him to feel towards the Jews, towards Bnei Israel, if he's growing up in this other kind of house, in this other kind of environment? So now she's moving to Ibn Ezra, because she wants to give this other interesting idea, which means what we see many times is that Nechama is not continuing with a certain parshan and trying to see their shita along the way. She wants to bring in a lot of different parshanim in order to develop this composite idea that she wants to present. So she brings in Ibn Ezra, and Ibn Ezra says something very interesting. Ibn Ezra says, machshavot Hashem amku. We don't know what Hashem is thinking, because we see Hashem is so deep that Hashem dafka wanted Moshe to grow up in a house of the Egyptians, so he'll grow up in the house of a king, in a monarchy. So he'll feel a certain kind of power, a certain kind of proactivity, a certain kind of ability to act. And he won't feel lowly and powerless if he would have been brought up in the house of the slaves. So that's very interesting that Nechama Leibovitz already wants us to view Moshe in both of these ways, to bring in Rashi, he's compassionate, and also that he was brought up in the house of the Egyptians, especially in the house of Paro, because that would give him a certain kind of elan, a certain kind of self-image. And now she's going on, and she says, if, she's still quoting Ibn Ezra, and Ibn Ezra continues, and he says, a lot of times, davar acher, ilu haya godel ben echav v'yakiruhu min urav, lo hayu yireim mimenu, ki yachshivuhu ke'echad mehem. Ibn Ezra also says something very interesting. He says, if you come from a certain neighborhood or community, and everyone knows you when you grew up, what do they think about you? Oh, you're a little kid. We don't have to take you seriously. It's very hard to take someone seriously if you know them from when they're a kid. So Moshe had to be separated from Am Yisrael. So when he comes back in, everyone will respect him. Everyone will feel a certain kind of honor and kavod for him because, you know, he's not the local boy who did well and then grew up. So that's also a very interesting view of the Ibn Ezra that wants to say, oh, there was a lot of positive for Moshe when he grows up in the house of Paro. And now she is going to another aspect of Moshe and the whole story. And she says, okay, what really is the transformation of Moshe from a man to a Navi, to a prophet? What is the transition? Where do we see that he deserves to be this great leader of Am Yisrael? Meaning, what happened from the time he goes out and he sees his brethren, from that moment in the house of Paro, that Hashem chooses him to be this great leader? What is that transition? What are the actions that that Moshe does? And she brings something very fascinating. She says that really, Moshe is the archetype, the Av Tipus, the archetype. I'm on page of the small print. I'm on page 35 in the Hebrew, in the last two paragraphs. So page 35 in the Hebrew, meaning not the big numbers on bottom, but the columns. I just want to make sure everyone sees where I am. So Nechama is saying, Moshe did three things in the beginning that really show that he was a great leader. Now, if you've heard it from other people, Nechama is the first one to really plot this out. So a lot of ideas, many times that you hear from other people, really, Nechama is really the, not the first one who ever said it, but who organizes it in a certain way, and that became very popular and well-known. But this chart, or this idea, is very much a Nechama idea. Moshe saves people three different times. The first time Moshe saves is Sichsuch Ben Ivri Leven Nochri, between a Hebrew, a Jew, and a non-Jew. What does Moshe do? Now, so interesting. What didn't we find yet? What didn't Nechama do yet? Nechama didn't bring the next part of the Pasuk. What does Moshe see? It's really, Vayigdal Moshe Vayitze Elecha Vayar B'siv Lotam. He sees their oppression, and Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Me'echav. He sees an Egyptian hitting an Israelite, a Hebrew, from his brethren. And he hits the Mitzri and he hides him in the dust, in the sand. What's fascinating is that Nechama just brought out so far that he goes out. And remember, Nechama is so into the psukim, into the text. Why is she doing this? And we're going to see. She shows, Nechama is trying to explain that Moshe is a great leader. Number one, what does he do when he goes out and he sees his brethren are oppressed? What does he do? He saves the Ivri. He hits the Egyptian, he kills the Egyptian, and he hides him in the sand. Number two, what does Nechama say? The second story, we all know. What does he do? He goes to the two Hebrews that are fighting, and he asks, Lama takereyecha? Meaning, she's assuming we all know these stories. She's not even going into the psukim. She wants to show us this idea. What does Moshe do? He tries to solve the problem between two Hebrews. So Moshe seeks justice between a Jew and a non-Jew. Moshe seeks justice between a Jew and a Jew. And Moshe seeks justice between between two groups of non-Jews, right? He saves the daughters of Yitro from the shepherds who are harassing them at the well. So Moshe is saving a Jew from a non-Jew. Two Jews from each other, and two non-Jewish groups from each other, which means, what is Moshe? A seeker of justice. And in each case, Moshe is saving the underdog. What did he try to do with the two Jews? They were just arguing, but he wanted to stop the argument. He wanted to stop the fight. And in each case, there are ramifications. And negative ramifications. But Moshe is willing to stand up for what is just. So Nechama is really developing Moshe as a seeker of justice. So we see so far that is his goal. Now let's go to page 36 in the columns. Right? So the first column on page 36, meaning it is 36. Not in the big numbers, in the small iyun in Hebrew. Okay, we're working in the small iyun in Hebrew. What page do you have?
29.
Page 29 of the bigger booklet. 36.
Page 29, 36 on the happy leaf.
So Nechama is developing this idea. I just want to make sure everyone sees where we are. Nechama is developing this idea that Moshe is a seeker of justice, even if the consequences are going to be negative. Because when he discusses with the two Hebrews that are fighting, he says, are you going to kill us like you killed the Mitzri? So Moshe realized he was found out, which means there are ramifications and repercussions for being a seeker of justice. But Moshe is willing to do that because that is Moshe. He is a seeker of justice. But now Nechama is going to go back to that original first act. Yes, he's seeking justice, but what is his method of seeking justice? And again, we're going back to the question that Nechama is going to ask, was Moshe justified or not? Now, what does she bring in? She says, the first act that Moshe does that we know about, remember, we don't know his is early youth, as she says. But the first act that the Torah is telling us is that Moshe killed somebody. But look at the language that Nechama is. So all of a sudden she's bringing in this question, meaning she just spent all this time telling us that Moshe is a seeker of justice. So we have this picture of Moshe as a seeker of justice. But now she's going to go, but what about that first time? What was his action? He's the father of all the Nevi'im. He gave us the Torah. And what's his first act? Look at the middle paragraph. And she says, his first act was Retzach, murder. Now that's a very strong word for Nechama to use, because what could you use if you wanted to use another word? Maybe hariga, that the person was killed. That's very different than using the word murder, Retzach. So Nechama, after telling us that Moshe is a man who seeks justice, is now going to ask, but what about that first act? She's already framing it in the category of Retzach. And what is she saying? Oh, and I'm not the first one to ask this question. She says a lot of Baalei Pshat, a lot of individuals who are looking to the Pshat, and a lot of Baalei Drash, and a lot of Rishonim and Achronim, Lo Matzu Manoach, they couldn't find the rest. They were so bothered by this question. And now we're going to ask the question, how could Moshe Rabbeinu kill a person without justice, bli mishpat, or without a court case, or without bringing this issue to court? So what's very fascinating is that Nechama, by discussing Moshe, but now she segues to the question of his first act. Nechama is saying, this is not my question. We see that a lot of Baalei Pshat, a lot of Rishonim, a lot of Achronim, a lot of Baalei Amidrash ask this question too. But what are we going to see? They do not. Meaning, most of the traditional views of Moshe about this first act is that he's a hero. He did the right thing. He saves his brethren. But what is the question Nechama wants to ask that we saw already in some of the Iyunim? What lesson can we learn from this? Is there a moral message for everybody? Because what's our goal? To learn morality and to learn from the psukim, of course, but to get a bigger question. Now, is it okay for Moshe to do this? So even though she's saying, oh, this was a question among a lot of Pashtanim and a lot of early commentators, it's really not. Meaning most views see it as absolutely justified. So how is Nechama going to present this to us to say, oh, this is really a big question? So we saw last time also, what was the traditional view of Miriam and Yocheved? The Mialdot, excuse me, are Miriam and Yocheved, and the Mialdot, at least for sure, are Hebrew, are Jewish. There's only a very minority view that says this other view, but Nechama develops this whole idea. So what we're seeing also is that Nechama wants to ask interesting questions, out-of-the-box questions. And the question is, her bigger answer and her bigger lesson is going to be very interesting, but that already changes how we see some of our great leaders, how we ask certain questions, and what is important when we're learning Torah, what are some of the important questions that we should be asking. And let's do this Iyun. So what do we see? She just brings in that, what do we see? Unusual for Nechama. She just says, what do we see? Ish Mitzri make Ish Ivri Me'echav. She splits the pasuk, meaning she doesn't bring the whole pasuk together. Originally she said, Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Elechav Vayar Besiv Lotam. And what does she now say? Really it should be, Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Me'echav. But she only brings part of that pasuk to focus on what? Ah, what does Moshe see? He sees an Egyptian hitting an Ish Ivri Me'echav. And now the question is, because Nechama is a linguist, what does it mean, makeh? What does it mean to hit? And what's our big question? Was it with intent to kill or not? If he's being hit with the intent to kill, what is Moshe? Saving someone from death. Because he's defending someone. If someone is about to kill someone, you want to defend them. Because you have to defend someone if someone is about to be murdered. what do we call this idea? Rodef, and we'll see how Nechama develops this. If someone is running after someone and is about to kill them, you're allowed to kill the one who is running after, the assailant. Who's the assailant who's running after the victim. So how does Nechama go about this idea? She says, some will explain that makeh is like hariga, which means when the Egyptian is hitting the Hebrew, it's with the intent to kill. That makeh could be with intent to kill. And what does she bring in? She shows, look, we see in Breshit, levilti hakototo. What did Cain need? Cain needed a sign on his head because we didn't want people to hit him, lahakototo. Of course, what's the implication there? To kill him. So he gets a sign, so he wouldn't be killed. So makeh, and we know we have it in other places in Tanakh, the idea of hitting can be intent to kill. For example, Vayachet HaMitzri, she also, fascinating, what does she bring? She brings the King James Version, which means she wants to show the universal interpretation, the King James Bible, what's the language? He slew the Egyptian, right? And also the French, that he kills him. So the Egyptian has the intent to kill the Hebrew, and then Moshe, with intent to kill, right, is hitting the Egyptian because he sees that he has intent to kill. Just like Umake Adam Yumat. So we know in Vayikra it says, right, if you have the intent to kill someone, then you deserve the death penalty. So what does she want to explain? If the Egyptian is hitting the Jew, or is Hebrew, right, from Bnei Israel, with the intent to kill, then what is Moshe? Defending the Jewish life. And he is really saving the Hebrew's life, which means he is making sure that the Egyptian is not going to kill the Hebrew, Bnei Israel, and that this is totally justified. And what do we see in Shmot Rabbah? V'hayama ke'oto u'mevakesh lehorgo. The Medrash clearly states, in Shmot Rabbah, what was the intent of the Egyptian? To kill the Hebrew, to kill Bnei Israel, to kill the Ivri. So Moshe is absolutely justified. So in the traditional Medrash, in Shmot Rabbah, Moshe is justified because there was intent to kill. And if that is true, she brings in Rambam Hilchot Rotzeach, absolutely true. You're justified when you see a rodef, when you see someone running after someone with the intent to kill them, you can kill the person who's the assailant, the person who's running after the other individual, which means justified, justified, justified. So Nechama starts the idea, we have this question, but we see there was intent to kill. Moshe is defending the Ivri. Absolutely, it is justified. But then she says, Aval im nefarshehu, kederech rova mefarshim. But now, if we go to the next step, but we look at most of the mefarshim that don't think that makeh is with intent to kill, which means what is Nechama looking for? Nechama is looking for that the mefarshim have to absolutely argue this question and have to bring in the words that there was intent to kill. So she's looking at Rashi. What does Rashi say? What was this Egyptian doing? Makehu, malkehu verodehu. What is he doing? He is lashing him, and he is really oppressing him, and really hitting him in a very oppressive manner. So Nechama is saying, malkehu verodehu, what does that mean? Malkehu verodehu is not intent to kill. It's giving lashes. He's whipping him. And he's also terribly oppressing him. Now, Nechama's not bringing the rest of the story. What's the rest of the story that Rashi brings? Rashi is saying, this Egyptian was going into the house of this Hebrew woman, and he was having relations with her, and then she didn't know that because he would make the husband go out to work in order to make her available. When the husband came back, finally he realizes it, and he sees the Egyptian, and he's showing him, I know that this is happening. And as a result, the Egyptian is malkehu verodehu. He is lashing him, and he is oppressing him. According to the way Rashi understands malkehu verodehu, it's clearly intent to kill. Because what do we know about malkot? What do we know about malkot? What's our halacha about malkot? You can only do 39, We don't do 40, because what's the accepted view? That if you do 40, the person will die. This is just to really punish them till almost like an inch of their life. But not only is he Malkehu, he's also Rodehu, which means he's doing two acts of whipping and oppression. Which means when Moshe is seeing this, according to Rashi, what is definitely according to Rashi's view, the way we would really understand it, that he's trying to kill him. He's really oppressing him within the inch of his life. He's lashing him within the inch of his life. But Nahama is saying, no, Rashi's not asking the question, was this intent to kill or not? But really, by Rashi saying Malkehu Verodehu and bringing the story, really Rashi is saying, yeah, there was intent to kill. But Nahama is saying, no, Rashi doesn't use those words. So Rashi's also asking the question if this was right. But Rashi never asks the question. So it's very interesting here with this use of Malkehu Verodehu. Nahama's understanding, that means that Rashi is not asking the question, oh, is this to kill or not? But really, the implication, and most people understand, that it was with intent to kill. So that is fascinating. But at the same breath, and this is what is interesting, what Nahama does here, with the same breath that she just quoted Rashi, implying that Rashi also might think this is unjustified because we don't know if there was intent to kill, even though, again, let's be clear, clearly the way Rashi is explaining it is intent to kill, and he never questions what Moshe was doing in this case. She then brings in Naftali Hertz Weisel. She says, yeah, v'hinei ha'sheila kasha. It's a very hard question. V'kacha menascha Naftali Hertz Weisel. Who is Naftali Hertz Weisel? Does anyone know who he is?
Is that on our paper?
What? No. Okay. She just quoted Rashi. And in the next heartbeat, who was she quoting? Right? Naftali Hertz Weisel. Naftali Hertz Vesely, if you want the more, you know, English name. He is the student of Moses Mendelssohn. And he wrote a very famous work, Divrei Shalom Ve'emet, that was totally a breakthrough or a break in the Jewish community. He's a student of Moses Mendelssohn, and he wrote this piece, Divrei Shalom Be'emet, in the Edict of Toleration under Emperor Joseph II, Divrei Shalom Be'emet. Under Emperor Joseph II, right, they wanted to do the Acts of Toleration. And he wrote this whole piece to show, we want to be emancipated, we want to be part of the secular community, and we should first teach our kids secular knowledge, and then afterwards, you know, teach them some Torah. But the base should really be secular knowledge. Now, you have to understand, there was a huge outcry of all the community when he did this. And he also wrote a big poem, is like a Perush, and an explanation on Shmot, and he did many other things. So he's from he wrote this in 1782, Divrei Shalom Ve'emet, and he's a consummate maskil, 1725 to 1805. And what's fascinating is how can you bring Rashi, just bring two words from Rashi, where Rashi's really implying intent to kill by saying Malkot, because we know Malkot is we only give 39 because it is harsh, and then to do also Rodeo, and then in the same breath to say, oh, and Naftali Hertz Weisel also has this question. You really can't put the two together that way. But she wants to ask this hard question, but really none of the Mefarshim are asking this hard question, so she's bringing in Naftali Hertz Weisel, but really, it's very hard. It's hard to bring this in. Meaning this is really a difficult thing that Nahama's doing here. Now look what Nahama is doing. She's quoting. So she's running from, she's going by saying Rashi, and you know, Rashi might have this question, which it's not clear that he does, right? And then she brings in Naftali Hertz Weisel's question, interjected between classical Mefarshim, to give them almost, are you giving them all the same voice? So this is a big question. You know, can you do this? It's important to say where everyone's from and how they fit in. But by just mixing everyone together and most people don't know who he is. How can you stick it in this way? And not only is he giving a linguistic question, he is now giving a hashkafic comment. He is making a philosophical comment. So it's not like, oh, I'm using someone to say something interesting in grammar, right? She's bringing him to bring a whole hashkafa that she said originally, oh, everybody, you know, has this big question.
Did she get pushback from all the people that took, like, got Gilio when she would bring...
So for these Iyunim, and that's why we're doing Nechama Leibovitz, which means for these kind of things, this is a little bit of a radical, you know, approach to insert these kind of things. So there was some kind of pushback. Some saying, "Oh, this is, you know, interesting. You put it all together." Others, no. How can you, first of all, put them all in the same category and not really explain beyond and separate it out? You can't just say, "Quote." Rambam, right, with the Rodef, then quote Rashi, and then quote Naftali Hertz Weisel, and then go to Ramban. So it's not that you can just say, oh, everyone, you know, they have something to say, we put them together. So this approach, so there is definitely pushback on putting everyone on the same level. And that could be dangerous because you're not really understanding who are the different views. So even though it's an interesting view to bring in, number one, it's not a classic view. And to put it in the same, you know, order and within, you know, Rashi, Hertz Weisel, and Ramban, you really can't do that.
So did you say that she says that most of the Mefarshim agree that Makeh was not to kill?
No, she's saying a lot of the Mefarshim are asking this question. But we're going to see that none of the Mefarshim pretty much ask this question. That's what's so fascinating. So in her Yun, who does she have to bring in to ask this crazy question? Naftali Hertz Weisel. Okay, so that's very fascinating. So what does he say? So what does he say? Ah. Nir'eh she'yeh ma'aseu shelo b'mishpat. What is her quote of Naftali Hertz Weisel? And it seems like Moshe did not do this b'mishpat, justified. Here she spends this whole time saying justified, right? And she explains it. And then she's bringing in this person. She brings him right after implying that, oh, Rashi also might not think it's justified by just by using the words Malkeu Verodeu, which is really not a good reference. What does she say? Ah, it seems like he did it without justice. Shelo b'mishpat. Ki im ba'avur hakoto yehargeo, because if he hits him and he kills him, u'shvichut damim hu's haru aleim b'nei adam kodem matan Torah. The Torah wasn't given yet, but everyone knows you're not allowed to kill. So how could Moshe be killing this Egyptian? Umali shofech dam ivri o shofech dam mitri. We don't care if you're killing an Egyptian or you're killing a Hebrew, right? It's all the same. We should care the same about everyone's blood. So you also understand he has an agenda here, a very strong agenda when he is bringing this question, because his whole point is to show how the Jews want to become much more acculturated into the community. What's it going to help his nation if he kills one in hiding? What does it help all the Jews if he kills and then he hides him into the sand? He says, what is this? It can't be. The only thing it could be, nekama v'chema b'li mishpat. It is... What is nekama?
Revenge
and chema, anger, b'li mishpat. Hello, Nechama, who's mispshat, right? Who always wants to say, it only says he sees him oppressing his brother and he kills him. It doesn't say that Moshe got angry and he does this out of character. So by bringing him in, she's bolstering this idea, but really, it's not a classic idea, and Naftali Hertz Weisel is not even sticking to the pshat at all. But even more so, look what she goes on to say. V'rabot bikshu chachameinu uparshanenu lahavinu lahaspirit ma'aseh. A lot of our parshanim are asking the question, how did he do this? She hasn't brought one yet, right? Rashi is not good. And also, so she brings, Ramban. I'm bringing Ramban. So what does she say? This? Oh, let's bring some views of the parshanim. Look at the Ramban. She says, Ramban eino one la'sheila musarit klal. He doesn't ask the musar question, but he says, Vayetze lechav, the minute he heard that he was Jewish, Vayachafetz lirotam ba'avur she'emechav, and he felt for them as his brothers, He looked at their suffering. Hineni stakel besivlotam va'amalam ve'lo yachol lisbol. Similar to Rashi. He saw their oppression and he couldn't stand it. Ve'lachen haraga mitzri hamakeh nilchatz. He couldn't stand the oppression and therefore he killed the Egyptian. Ramban is not saying he did the wrong thing. Ramban is saying, yeah, he saw this injustice being done. He couldn't take injustice happening, so he kills the mitzri. Ramban is not asking the question, was this justified or not? The implication of what Ramban is saying is that it was justified, which means we don't have any of the classic sources really asking this question. And by bringing Naftali Hertzweisel and implying that Ramban is also asking this question, it's very hard, right? It's not really really legitimate in what we're seeing. So what she's saying, ha'asak ha'chok ha'mutar, she's implying when Ramban is saying, oh, when he saw their hurt and their suffering, and he couldn't take it anymore, and therefore he hit the mitzri, Ramban's not asking, ha'asak ha'chok ha'mutar. She's putting that in Ramban's mouth by just asking, oh, he did this. Ramban's not asking, oh, did he do this impulsively? Ramban is not asking, did he do this according to the rules? Ramban is saying, no. Just like Rashi, he felt this compassion for his brothers, so he goes out and he does this. We really only find the real big question among traditional Parshanim, was it justified or not? We only find it much later. Go to the next page, 38, on the columns in Hebrew. And we have Yaakov Mecklenburg. He's Baal Aktava Kabbalah. The Ktav and the Kabbalah is always trying to show how things in the Torah work with the halacha and how our great forefathers, whatever they did, and the actions work with the halacha. He was active in the 1840s. So we have to go all the way to the 1840s when we have this question. Because when did this question really come up? This question really comes up once you have the Haskalah being very popular, and a lot of people are dealing with these questions, and only then, right, do we have these questions coming up. So the Ktav and the Kabbalah, he asks the question, and these two are beautiful ideas. What is Moshe thinking? And I'm reading on the top of page 38. What did Moshe think? He saw all these Jews standing around, looking at this Egyptian oppressing this Hebrew. V'yatzil et echav ha-mukeh v'yar ki ein ish. He saw no one was around. What does it mean, v'yar ki ein ish? He saw that was no Jew who would stand up for his brothers to save this Egyptian, to save this Hebrew, to save this brother from Bnei Israel. So Moshe stood up, which means v'tz v'yar ki ein ish. He looks around and he sees no one is going to stand up. No Jew is standing up for this Jew, and I'm going to stand up for them. So the Ktav and the Kabbalah sees this as justified. He is standing up. He's not asking was it the right thing to do. He's saying, why did Moshe Dafka have to stand up? Because no one was standing up. No other Jews were standing up. They were looking at the oppression of the Jew, and they would let that happen. And Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv, Nechama brings in, says what? It wasn't that Vayar Ki Ein Ish, there were no Jews who would stand up for their Jewish brother. There were no Egyptians. There was no justice system that was set up in Egypt that was moral and ethical. And that's why Moshe had to step in and take justice into his own hands, because there was no justice system. And what Moshe was doing was just. And then Nechama brings in, what is the source for this? We see this in the Vayikra Rabbah. What does the Vayikra Rabbah say? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ra'a she'ein mi'yamod v'yekaneh lishmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one was there to stand up for Hashem's name. So what are we really seeing from all the traditional sources? Moshe was absolutely justified. He's doing this to save not only someone from Am Yisrael, he's also saving Hashem's name. By the Jews being oppressed, there's no Kiddush Hashem. It's a Chilul Hashem. And no Jews were standing up, no Egyptians were standing up, so Moshe is standing up and he is doing the just thing. Which means, even though Nechama is bringing up this question by Naftali Hertzweisel, really all the Mefarshim and the classical Mefarshim and for centuries, millennia, are really explaining that Moshe did the right thing, whether it's Midrash, whether it's Parshanut, because he is standing up. defending the Jews, defending Hashem's name. He's standing up for the victim, for the oppressed, just like she herself showed that in each way he is standing up and he is really saving the oppressed, saving the one who unjust things are happening to them.
Sorry, who says Moshe stood up for Hashem's name?
That is the Vayikra Rabba. That's Rabbi Yehuda. So, what do we find? Yes?
Is he doing this as a prince of Egypt? I mean, you know, it said the Libo, but he, you know, he is a prince of Egypt. So, he's not really acting as, you know, the slaves around him are not seeing him as a Jew. I mean, he himself, I feel that he's a Jew.
Right. That's a very good question. This is not what the Iyun's about, but you're right. Meaning, what is motivating? She brings a little when she brings the Ibn Ezra to show how did Moshe feel that he could be empowered to do something like this in a place where there's, you know, so much oppression and the Jews are not standing up for themselves and he's standing up for themselves. But he is someone who is a leader who sees that justice has to be done. But what's fascinating is how Nechama ends this Iyun. What was Nechama's real question that we said from the beginning? Was he justified or not? Now, Nechama is going to bring a very interesting midrash in the end of her Iyun. And this is called Midrash Ptirat Moshe. This is not a classical midrash. In her other views, Shmot Rabba, classical midrash. Vayikra Rabba, classical midrash. But there are compendiums of these midrashim. We have old manuscripts and that were collected together of many different kind of midrashim. Not your classic Tanchuma, not your classic Rabba or other kind of midrashim. And this can be traced back maybe to 7th century, 11th century. It's published in 1516 for the first time. Called Ptirat Moshe, the death of Moshe. And this whole midrash, again, not a classic, not one that's very popular, but we learn things from Adat Yachid, but the fact that she has to go so far to pick this unusual midrash in order to prove her last point shows that, again, what is Nechama doing? She's going against the mainstream, which means when she's bringing this view, this is really a mainstream at all view. But she's bringing in because she wants to prove her message. And she wants to show that my ideas, even though they might not be mainstream views, but they do have some kind of sources. And I can find, footholds in some of the traditional sources for this. And what is her midrash? Her midrash is Midrash Ptirat Moshe. When Moshe is dying and he's davening to Hashem to be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael, he pulls out all the stops. Trying to say, you know, I did this and I did that and I did that. You have to let me go into Eretz Yisrael. I just want to see Eretz Yisrael, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, not just to see it from the mountain. And he's arguing with Hashem in Parshat Vayetchanan, right? And he's saying, okay, I really deserve to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem asks him, who are you? And he says, oh, I'm the son of Amram, who's the son of X, Y, and Z, until all the way goes to Levi. So he says, you should let me live because Adam HaRishon ate from Eitz HaDaat. You didn't kill him. Noach was saved from the Teva, right? From the Mabul in the Teva, even though he didn't daven for Am Yisrael. Avraham had a child like Ishmael. Yitzchak has a child like Esav who's oppressing Am Yisrael. So really this Medrash is trying to say, I'm so good. You have to let me go into Eretz Yisrael. And then Hashem asks him, I'm on the last three lines of the Midrash quote on page 39. He asks him, Klum amarti lecha shetaharog et ha-mitzri? Did I tell you to kill the Egyptian? Now remember, we did not find this question in any of the classical Parshanim. But she finds this esoteric Midrash, and we know Midrash many times asked a lot of the important questions, said, did I tell you to kill the Mitzri? So Moshe answers to Hashem, but you killed all of Bechorei Mitzrayim. You killed all the firstborn of Mitzrayim. That's worse than me killing this one Egyptian. So Amar lo HaKodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, Va'ata dome elai? Are you like me? Me mitu mechayeh? I can kill, but I can also revive. Klumata yachol lahachayot kamoni. Can you revive like me? Meaning, Moshe, you're not God. So Nechama brings in this midrash because what does she want to say in the end? Even Moshe is culpable for killing the Mitzri, even though that was his first act, and maybe he did it out of compassion and having good feelings. She, Nechama, wants to teach that we can never kill a person without a real court, without real, not just justification, but with real formality that it goes through a court system. So her conclusion is that if Moshe only had this avera in this first act, then he would have had to have onesh mita. Now, you have to understand, I just want to say, meaning Nechama is, as we saw, wants to always bring a message. Her message here is that no one is above the law, not even Moshe Rabbeinu. Not even when he did what he did to save Yisrael under no circumstances. Now, that's pretty tough and harsh because we know in unusual circumstances, whether there's so many different instances where you have to do what you have to do in these kind of circumstances, especially Rodef, oppression. There are so many of these different situations, but she wants to teach that nobody is above the law. But Moshe doesn't deserve death penalty for this, but Hashem is just telling him, right, you can't go into Eretz Yisrael. I won't prolong your life to go into Eretz Yisrael at this point. But for Nechama, this is the message that she wants to teach. Nobody is above the law, not even Moshe Rabbeinu. But we see that it's a very hard sell because the classical view is that clearly Moshe was justified. And she does a very good job showing in the beginning how Moshe is really justified, but she wants to show that the manner that you do it. But she had to revert to Naftali Tzvi Weizel and to this esoteric midrash in order to prove it, because this is definitely going against the classical taught. But she wanted to teach this lesson.
Many of her
Iyunim?
All the things that she writes, is many of them controversial or just the ones you chose?
So she has a lot that bring a lot of different ideas. And a lot of the pieces that she does are bringing in these different views, but also she does a lot of classic Iyunim. But these are some of the most well known that became like hallmarks of the Shita, of you know how she works. And that's why many, as we said in our first class, on the one hand, the use of traditional Parshanim that she taught and how you work is amazing. And then you also have a pushback where, you know, you have to be maybe more selective of the sources that you bring. And she also spawned a whole more academic approach to how, you know, Tanakh works within, you know, religious circles. And she had a big hand in that. So you really see how you have different schools of, you know, students who went, you know, in different ways. So she does have a huge positive impact, but also these are the places where there was, you know, where there's pushback. You know, what kind of sources are you using? Who are the individuals that you use? Are you using them just for a grammatical comment, or are you getting, you know, a worldview? Now, this is a midrash. It is an esoteric midrash, but the real monkey in this, or the monkey wrench in this iyun, is really the Naftali Hertz Weizel and the way it's put seamlessly, you know, within the other mikorot. So she did. There were a lot of letters going back and forth of individuals, and you know, there have been different approaches of how you use, you know, her material, or what do you take and what not, even though she really did a huge and amazing amount of work that had a huge, you know, influence. And also there are a lot of classical mefarshim. But this was her approach, and wanted to show in Sefer Shmot, which the Iyunim Chadashim, which was this more broad approach that, as we see in this class, and, you know, there has been, you know, pushback on some of these kind of Iyunim.